the Dead Zone Containment Protocols from Mantic Games.
The Price of Loyalty by Ross Watson. It felt like the checklist was mocking him. Captain Jarrett Price scowled at the display, swiping his finger across numerous blinking icons indicating areas of the ship that had yet to be fully checked off before activating the jump drive. A holographic overlay on the captain's station indicated where cargo would need to be shifted in order to keep the ship's hull stress pattern from edging outside of parameters, a task made infinitely more onerous by the need to accommodate Transgulf Interstellar's exacting rescue procedures.
50 perfect trips,
Price growled, turning in his command chair to face his first officer.
Half a hundred times we've taken the Queen out with zero problems. Now we've got to deal with this nonsense.
Price waved a hand at an urgently blinking crimson icon on the ship's holographic overlay.
A distress beacon is hardly nonsense, Captain.
The gentle reproof came from the navigation console, where Lieutenant James Tovar arched an eyebrow at his grumbling superior.
In fact, company protocols call for us to stop and render aid as quickly as possible.
Price scoffed.
Pah. That's for the blue flag cruise liners, not for bulk freighters like us. We hardly have any room for ourselves, much less a bunch of refugees. Just making space for anyone we find out there is playing hell with my load plan.
Despite the deep frown on his face, Price shook his head in resignation as Tovar opened his mouth to protest further. Price felt a surge of dislike for the sometimes stifling rules Transgulf Interstellar imposed upon its vessels. He often wished he were more like his second-in-command, for Tovar was an exemplary officer and knew every regulation by heart.
Not to worry, Jane,
Price soothed.
We'll alter our course and pick them up, but I'll be damned if I let this little side trip mess with our perfect record.
Unconsciously, the captain's hand moved to stroke the stripes of his rank on his uniform sleeve, a sight that caused Lieutenant Tovar's mouth to quirk in a half-smile.
If I may, sir, it can hardly hurt your chances for promotion if you end up rescuing some blue flag VIPs, as unlikely as that is this far out on the rim.
Price's fingers jerked guiltily away from his uniform, the captain turning his motion into a nonchalant straightening of his ship suit instead.
Quite right,
he responded gruffly, ostentatiously turning his attention back to the display.
Well, enough larking about. Let's go take a look at our lost lambs and gather in the flock, shall we?
The screen before him showed the status of his ship, the Eclipse Queen, and Price couldn't help a surge of pride every time he examined it. The Queen had been under his command for over 2 decades, and she was a sturdy, if otherwise unremarkable, vessel. One of a numberless horde of bulk freighters serving the galaxy-spanning realm that many simply called the Corporation. Price activated the ship's intercom.
Everyone, secure for jump.
Since most of the vessel's operations were automated, the Queen only required a small crew, and Price watched each individual status indicator flicker to green as the dozen spacers on duty within her hull strapped in. Despite Price's reluctance to deviate from his comfortable routine, he noted the crew's swift response time with a feeling of pleasure. Unlike many of her kind, the Eclipse Queen was equipped with a subluminal McKinley drive engine, a device that allowed the vessel to slide through distortions in the space-time continuum. Even an experienced spacer like Captain Price knew better than to take such jaunts lightly, and several indicators on the oh-so-thorough checklist were meant to erase all but the most remote chances of error when plotting a jump. Once all the indicators flipped to green, Price's hands guided the controls through one final confirmation, and the ship's jump engines warmed up. In moments, the freighter shimmered and vanished through a bend in the space-time continuum, reappearing trillions of miles away. When the ship emerged at her destination, the navigation display lit up with dozens of warning icons.
Proximity alert. We're right next to the debris field,
Tovar announced, his voice tense. Both officers quickly set to work guiding the ship to a new heading. The Queen's fusion generators spiked energy to thrusters, and the ponderous freighter swung away on a tight parabola past the debris field. The navigation console flung up dozens of threat identifiers, from twisted chunks of broken hull plating to still sparking drive engines.
Bloody rescue missions,
Price growled, his fingers flying on the controls as he eased his vessel through the sharp maneuver.
Tovar, give me a report on what we're dealing with here.
Looks like the debris from multiple sources. Sensors are picking up signs of a battle. This isn't some kind of accident, sir.
The lieutenant's professional calm soothed his commanding officer's tension, with the ease of long practice as the warning indicators faded from angry red to amber. Tovar swallowed as he found that no small number of the tiny objects littering space nearby registered as inert organic material. Corpses.
Any signs of other ships nearby?
Price demanded. The Queen was not equipped for a fight, and his fingers hovered over the jump controls. He, too, had seen the telltale markers of dead spacers.
Poor devils. Hope there's still someone left to rescue.
No, sir. Just wreckage. Whatever happened here, it's over.
Price let out a breath and scrubbed a hand over his face.
What about that distress beacon?
Tovar bent over his controls.
It's coming from a...
He hesitated.
Some kind of asteroid, sir. I'm putting the coordinates up on the main display.
The captain's eyes narrowed as he gazed at the screen. Imprecision was uncharacteristic of Tovar, but he could forgive the young officer's lapse, given the stress of the situation. Numerous markers indicated various pieces from other starships, remnants of some hard-fought battle in local space. A dimly glowing track led from the approximate area of the heaviest debris concentration down towards the only body in the system within range, an unpleasant bare chunk of rock that would only serve as a landing spot under the most severe circumstances.
Just what the hell happened here?
Price wondered aloud.
Send down the shuttle to pick up our survivors, Jane. But tell our boys to be careful. I don't like the looks of this.
The lieutenant stroked his mustache as he considered the woefully small amount of sidearms carried on board as a minimum grade security measure. Tovar frowned, but there was no point discussing the dangers. Transgulf Interstellar would take a dim view of ignoring its protocols, and would no doubt censure both the captain and his crew.
Yes, sir.
It was the only response he could make. The good news was that the rescue operation didn't take long. The bad news was that Lieutenant Tovar lost contact with the rescue shuttle soon after it touched down. Worse, when the shuttle began its return trip to the hangar bay, it broadcast only terse responses to Tovar's increasingly demanding inquiries. When it arrived, Price, Tovar, and a handful of crewmen were present in the hangar bay, holding their meager assortment of weapons at the ready. As the shuttle hatch hissed open, Price uttered a heartfelt curse. Inside stood at least a dozen figures, all of them heavily armed. Many of those weapons were aimed at the Queen's crewmen in the hangar, and one of the intruders had his pistol aimed directly at the shuttle pilot's head. The interlopers wore atmospheric processing rebreathers upon their faces, a necessity, Price reasoned, for survival on the asteroid. They wore mismatched, raggedly patched uniforms of similar colors, and there were a pair of aliens amongst their group. Price spotted the huge form of a Terraton, its reptilian skin iridescent under the hangar lights. Next to the hulking alien crouched a Yindish hunter, the creature's long tail thrashing just over the deck. A human stepped forward from the group, radiating a sense of authority. The tarnished rank pips on her long uniform coat left little doubt of her identity as the group's commander. She reached up a gloved hand to pull down her rebreather, revealing a face that was almost serene, yet still aristocratic. Price scowled as he lowered his weapon. It was obvious that putting up resistance would only end with several of his crew getting killed for no possible gain.
My name is Farron,
she explained, the harsh lighting emphasizing her pale skin and her red hair draped over one shoulder.
My people, the folks you rescued, are Aero Squad.
She paused as she studied Price and Tovar, and her mouth quirked at the corners in a sardonic smile.
More importantly,
her hand brushed the pistol holstered at her hip.
As of now, I'm in control of this ship.
Doesn't look like I have much of a choice.
Price growled. He was surprised at the depth of his own emotion upon being hijacked. For as long as he'd been captain of the Eclipse Queen, he'd felt more comfortable than prideful.
Perhaps,
Price thought,
my old instincts aren't as buried as I assume. Rebel scum,
he growled.
I should have known.
Farron laughed, and the sound was echoed by her squad. High-pitched whistles from the Yindage, and a rumbling bass like rocks grinding together from a Terraton.
We prefer Rebs, but you're essentially correct.
Corporate Central was not universally loved throughout the galaxy. In fact, the Rebellion represented a significant portion of human worlds, allied with other alien races, in order to strike back against what they saw as unfair exploitation and conquest of their native cultures. An unofficial state of war existed between both groups, and the nearby debris field was no doubt a result of yet another battle in that war. Farron gestured curtly, and the Queen's crewmen were released. The other Rebs lowered their weapons, but Price could tell that the Reb commandos were more than ready to open fire if anyone offered resistance. The shuttle pilot and the rest of the Queen's crew were escorted away.
Most likely down to the storage bays.
Price calculated. It was the only reasonable place aboard to secure prisoners. The Reb commander studied Price, then nodded to herself as if satisfied.
No one will get hurt as long as you cooperate. Now you and your lieutenant need to come with me to the bridge.
She continued.
We have a lot to talk about.
The Eclipse Queen's bridge felt cramped, although there was technically plenty of room for three people to study the displays. Price sat with his arms crossed, gazing at Farron with undisguised hostility. Tovar merely sat quietly, but his frown and furrowed brow bespoke the younger officer's tension. Farron, for her part, seemed amused, although there was a core of steel to her that kept the conversation brisk.
Very interesting, Captain,
she said as she finished reviewing the ship's logs and darkened the screen.
I can see here you've had an exemplary record for your employers.
Farron looked up and smiled.
Pity that's all coming to an end today.
Price snorted in response, his face coloring. Farron waited a moment, then continued.
In fact, I have to apologize for interrupting your voyage. My team and I were on a mission to a planet called Nexus Psi when an enforcer patrol caught up with us. It's possible that some other teams have gotten through, but we were stranded on that blasted rock until you showed up in an answer to the beacon we salvaged from one of the corporate ships.
She took in both Tovar and Price with her eyes.
For that, you have my thanks. However,
her voice hardened.
Make no mistake, Captain. We're going to Nexus Psi, and you're taking us there.
Captain Price grunted.
It won't be quite that easy. We'll have to log our course change through NavCorp.
He explained carefully. Farron shook her head.
Not anymore.
She pulled a small device out of her pocket.
This is one of the workarounds we've developed to keep the corporation guessing.
She tossed the device to Tovar, who fumbly caught it.
Once we plug this in, your ship can pick up signals from other sources and get right to our destination with no one the wiser.
Price looked at Tovar, who shrugged and inserted the device into the Queen's navigation console. The first officer's fingers flew as he accessed the data for Nexus Psi.
That's out in the fifth sphere.
The young officer's tone was only a hair away from raising an objection. Price considered the display. The fifth sphere was the most recent stage of the corporation's growth as it pushed outwards through the galaxy. It was the wildest edge of corporate space, where advanced scouts and explorers were still cataloging worlds new to corporate control. For Price, it meant the absolute furthest reach of civilization. A thrill of mingled excitement, fear, and anticipation ran down his spine.
Out of the question,
he protested, although he knew he'd made the statement only for duty's sake. Tovar continued to read the navigational entry for their destination.
It's a frontier world, still in the early stages of colonization. In fact, the word Nexus means link. Clearly, Corporate Central has plans to use Nexus Psi as a stepping stone to push the frontier back even more.
Farron raised an eyebrow, glancing to Price.
Your first officer may be a bit pedantic, but he's also very smart.
And why do you need to go to this frontier world so badly?
Price asked, making effort to keep his voice level. The Reb commander leaned back in the chair and crossed her arms.
One of our agents works in colonial logistics. What better opportunity to make some munitions go missing than during the chaos of founding a new colony? You'd be surprised just how many weapons, ammunition, and other supplies the corporations are willing to cash on a brand new colony world.
Farron grinned.
We're going to Nexus Psi so we can rob the place blind.
The two ship officers sat stunned, exchanging incredulous glances. Price was the first to break the silence.
Just why are you telling us your plans like this? Doesn't this make us a liability or something? You're going to have to dispose of us once your mission's complete.
Tovar shifted his gaze nervously between his captain and the Reb commander. Farron sat silently for a moment.
I'm not surprised you think like that, Captain.
The Reb commander tilted her head, meeting Price's eyes steadily.
That's how a corporation would see the situation. Liabilities on a balance sheet, obstacles to be removed before making the quarterly profit quota.
Price's jaw clenched, and he ached to interrupt, but something unusual in the woman's speech restrained him. Something he hadn't heard in a long time. A hint of absolute, unconditional sincerity.
You sound like you really mean that,
Price murmured.
We might actually survive this,
he thought to himself.
I think a man should know what he's risking his life for, even if he's being forced into it.
Farron smiled sadly.
I don't believe in keeping a man a slave, forever laboring in the dark. That's why I'm with the Rebs. That's why we're going to pick up these weapons, to fight to free others from the chains that keep them yoked to the bottom line and the endless search for more wealth to exploit from the universe.
The Reb commander looked at Price thoughtfully.
You've led a privileged life, Captain. That's the reward for following the rules.
She paused.
I imagine you've never had to make a really difficult choice in your entire life.
Farron stood slowly.
Well, you're going to get to make one today.
She offered her hand to Price.
You have my word. Once we finish our mission, you and your people will be let go, free to do as you please. You can report us to the corporation after, and who knows?
She shrugged.
You may just get that promotion after all. But in the meantime, do we have a deal?
Captain Price looked down at the woman's outstretched hand, considering his options. Working with the Rebs was a betrayal of Transgulf Interstellar, of his home. He'd lose his ship, his commission, any chance of the pleasant life he'd been looking forward to as an admiral. He flicked his eyes towards Tovar and the control panel just past the lieutenant. He could order Tovar to activate the self-destruct, perhaps even try and capture the Reb commander here and now. He could even abandon ship, sneak away in a life pod. These and other scenarios flickered through Price's mind, each one considered, weighed, and ultimately rejected. In the end, Price knew he couldn't leave his crew at risk, couldn't demand they give up their lives for a corporate ideal that until this moment he had utterly taken for granted. Price stood and clasped Farron's hand in his.
My crew, my ship, my decision,
he growled.
As long as my people are safe, we've got a deal.
Nexus Psi was the first fifth sphere world that Price had ever seen. It was not at all what he had expected. It was a pretty world, composed of blues and grays, with striated bands of cloud cover. From orbit, it was easy to see why the corporation had laid claim to the planet and set up a colony here.
What have we got, Tovar?
Looks like we're not the only new arrivals.
Tovar tapped the keys on his console to bring up a host of additional orbital designations of other ships in the area, including several signals indicating inter-atmospheric landing craft. Price was busy with his own screen, attempting to download data from the in-system navigation buoys. The planetary grid only reluctantly accepted his Transgulf Interstellar ciphers, and one line of text blazed red on the display.
It's a lot worse than some crowded orbitals,
the captain grated.
This world's a dead zone.
Farron leaned over his shoulder, her eyes scanning Price's screen.
I wondered if that would be the case when we got here. My orders suggested this might happen.
Price turned his head and glowered at her.
You do know what dead zone means, right? This planet's cut off from all contact. It's under containment protocol. If we get caught down there, the enforcers are going to shoot us on sight.
Farron chuckled.
Then make sure we don't get caught, Captain.
Price narrowed his eyes.
And just how do you suggest we go about doing that?
The Reb commander studied the sensor readings.
This looks like a standard enforcer dispersal pattern. My people have had to deal with their pickets more than a few times in the past. There's usually a gap somewhere in the theta bands.
Her fingers tapped on the controls, highlighting a particular slice of the planet's orbital space. Price frowned as he scanned the projected track.
That's going to take some fancy maneuvers,
he muttered. The captain looked back to Farron challengingly. She smiled.
If I knew how to fly a ship, I'd hardly have let the two of you remain free, would I?
The Reb commander turned away, heading for the bridge's exit.
Make it work, Captain. I'll prepare the shuttle. My team and I are going down there as soon as we're in position.
Farron paused at the threshold.
Both of you are coming along as well. I can't risk leaving you up here and possibly taking off without us, can I?
The two officers hesitated. Due to Transgulf Interstellar's paranoid approach to biometric consoles, the Ellipse Queen would accept orders from no one else other than the two of them. Even if the crew could somehow get free and reach the bridge, they couldn't engage the drives or even call for help. The captain sighed and bent over his command console, adjusting the fit of his cap.
Let's get this over with,
he growled.
Look at it this way, sir,
Tovar offered with a smile.
At least we won't be bored.
Price exited the shuttle and looked around.
Boredom has its advantages,
he grumbled.
Just where exactly is this cache you're looking for?
The captain's breath puffed out into the early morning air on Nexus Psi. It was quite cold on the southern hemisphere. The entire group, rebels and ship officers alike, had bundled up in thick coats and gloves. Only the aliens seemed unaffected by the temperature. The Indish didn't seem to even deign to notice. while the Territon's thick hide shrugged off even the coldest wind. The shuttle had landed on the other side of a rocky ridge a few hundred meters from the outpost. The Rebs had chosen this site in order to use the planet's terrain to conceal the shuttle's landing from the outpost's sensors.
The weapons are stored in an armory at Outpost C-76, a little place the natives like to call Isla Cortana.
Farron consulted the holoscreen built into her armor's vambrace.
It's about a mile west. I didn't want to set down too close. I'm not expecting any company with all the confusion going on, but better safe than sorry.
She checked on the rest of her squad by eye, and in response every Reb tested his comm gear and checked his weapons before nodding, a confirmation of readiness. Price noticed that the Rebs were well-armed and prepared for trouble. Each soldier carried several grenades and reloads for his weapon. Price and Tovar each had known better than to ask for a weapon of their own.
What exactly do you expect from us?
Price asked.
You've left us nothing to defend ourselves with besides harsh language.
Farron smiled.
Stick near me and we'll keep you safe. You're a ride off this planet, remember?
The Territon made his rock-grinding laughing sound again, and the Rebs surrounded their captives as the group moved out. The Rebs seemed confident, almost cocky in the way that they approached their target. Price stroked his beard thoughtfully.
Farron said some other teams of Rebs may have been here already. Does she know she has backup close by?
The Reb commander studied Price, her head tilted as if she could read his thoughts.
Here.
She offered, pulling a spare comlink from her webbing.
Just to show that I'm serious.
Tovar frowned.
Aren't you worried that we'll call for help?
He asked. Price snorted, only to find Farron doing the same. The two officers smiled at each other briefly. Tovar didn't try to mask his confusion.
Who are we to call, Tovar?
Price asked.
The commander here.
He indicated Farron.
He's showing us a measure of trust by letting us listen in on their communications. We can't call the ship, since the crew's locked out of the bridge, and there's no voice remote systems. We can't call the local government, because we're not supposed to be here anyway. The enforcers will kill us just for breaking their containment protocol.
The captain nodded to Farron and clipped the comlink to his uniform.
Now, at least we'll know if there's trouble.
Tovar chuckled.
I see. My thanks, Commander.
Farron merely shook her head.
It's nothing. Now let's get moving. We've got a cache to rob.
True to her word, Farron led Aero Squad and the two ship officers from the landing site to the outpost in short order. Tovar was grateful to see some kind of shelter from the cold weather, but Price was less enthused. Their destination did not appear to be particularly special. Merely a two-story box-like structure with a loading dock to one side and an armored personnel door. On the roof, several bulbous sensor pods rested atop extended masts that doubled as a powerful communication array. The Rebs fanned out in a perimeter around the structure, leaving Price and Tovar accompanying Farron to explore the outpost itself. The two aliens also remained nearby, and Price judged them to be both bodyguards and jailers. Tovar glanced at him and nodded, making it plain the younger officer had reached the same conclusion.
Most of the armory itself is underground,
Farron commented as she opened a security panel next to the entrance. The commander plucked a complex scanner from her coat and ran it over the panel. She checked the readout, then attached a lead from the device that seemed to sync into the panel's electronics. Her scanner hummed, clicked, then the outpost door lurched open. Price was impressed, but he tried to school his face to indifference when he saw Farron looking at him. For her part, the Reb commander merely smiled and led the way inside. The outpost was dark and silent, a fact that Price gave thanks for at first. He had no desire to get caught in a crossfire or see corporation personnel killed during this raid. However, as they went further, the utter lack of people began to worry him. Every room they passed was empty, every workstation abandoned. Farron led them to an elevator, its cage reinforced and large enough to shift heavy loads. The commander hit a switch, and the cage began to smoothly descend. The group exited the elevator into the main armory level of the outpost. Bare rifle racks extended to either side, forming several head-height aisles. To either side sat vacant side chambers, marked with various notations of ammunition, energy clips, grenades, and other sundry military supplies. The armory appeared to be completely cleared out. Several storage bins were burst and shredded apart, and constellations of blast marks scored every surface of the walls. Price frowned as he swept the armory with his eyes.
Everything's gone.
Farron grunted in frustration and tapped her vambrace to activate its holoscreen, scrolling frantically. The captain sniffed the air, scenting ozone and spent cordite.
No weapons, no supplies, and something definitely went down before we arrived.
Lieutenant Tovar knelt down and swiped a hand through a set of black, sooty pockmarks in the neocrete floor.
I'll say, looks like there's been a hell of a fight here.
Tovar stood up, craning his neck to gaze at the other walls and ceiling.
From what I could tell, they were firing in all directions.
Firing at what?
Price asked, then held up a hand.
Wait, I'm not sure I really want to know.
Farron cursed and switched off her holodisplay.
Someone else must have made it here first.
The commander's eyes were hard.
Maybe another group of Rebs, but either way, we need to get off the planet and out from under the Enforcer's patrols. Now.
The Yindia suddenly moved forward, its nostrils quivering as it scented the air. The alien chittered to Farron, who simply nodded and held up a hand to signal a halt.
Alephine smells blood,
she explained to Price. The captain snorted.
Blood? Blast marks? Commander, it looks like someone else had the same idea as you and ran into some serious opposition. But that's not what worries me.
Farron tilted her head.
No?
Price waved a hand around at the ravaged outpost.
If there was a battle here, then where are all the bodies?
Farron nodded slowly.
There was no sign of any trouble outside either. This feels like a trap.
Tovar interrupted them.
You're both going to want to see this.
The young officer's voice quivered, his composed face pale beneath his service cap. Inside an empty chamber labeled grenades was a prodigious amount of dried blood. Dark crimson stained the floor in a large pool, and the Yindich hunter hissed in agitation. A message written in the same substance, in shaky red-brown letters across one of the chamber walls.
Liberate tutami,
Price read, swallowing.
That's Latin.
He turned to Tovar.
It means save yourselves.
Farron frowned.
Right.
She activated her comm system.
Rebs, we're leaving. Someone beat us to the punch.
She tossed her head and drew her pistol, aiming the weapon with a flick of her thumb.
I've seen enough, gentlemen. Let's get the hell off this planet.
No argument from me,
Price began, but he was cut off by frantic transmission through the Reb's comm system.
Commander, we've got enemy contact.
The report was terse, but in the background, Price could hear some weapons firing, and his heart began to pound. Farron was already sprinting for the elevator, followed closely by the two aliens, and the Eclipse Queen's officers hurried to catch up. When Price, Tovar, and Farron emerged from the outpost, the Reb commander was already shouting orders into her comlink. Her purposeful stride drew the Indige and Territon in her wake, towards where the fighting seemed heaviest. Bursts of gunfire flickered back and forth between the Rebs and another group of at least 20 figures advancing upon the outpost. The attackers looked human at first glance, but Price forced himself to focus closer. The forces flinging themselves against the Rebs were only superficially humanoid. They were brutish, hypermuscular parodies of the human form, still wearing ragged remnants of their former civilian clothing. Price could recognize a few on sight, one that still wore a scientist's hazard suit, another in the uniform of a corporate trooper, and yet another clad in the distinctive gear of a mine engineer. Their faces were slack, eyes completely filmed with white, and they staggered forward into the Reb's fire seemingly without fear. Many of these strange figures carried rifles that they fired back in desultory bursts, but they were clearly not a disciplined group.
What the hell?
Price blurted, his hands twitching towards the empty holster at his hip.
Sir, we can make a run for it, but we have to go right now.
Tovar hissed. Price hesitated, his mind racing as he gazed out towards the ongoing firefight. The Rebs were fighting fiercely, and Farron seemed to have forgotten about the two ship officers as she directed Aero Squad's defense. Tovar was right. There would never be a better time to make his way back to the shuttle, back to the Queen. Before he could complete the thought, everything changed. A series of chilling, bubbling howls rang out on all sides, and a wave of fleshy pink beasts sprinted forward into the assault. A group of canine forms split off from the main assault, curling around towards the outpost. Price saw only a glimpse of their naked muscles, glistening as the beast-like things leapt impossibly far. And then he was on his back in the dirt. The horrible beast's slavering jaws clashed together like a machine, its weight pinning Price down like a vice. Price cried out, his arm holding the thing's maw away from his face only by inches.
A dog?
Price thought.
This thing used to be a dog!
Desperately, the captain fought to keep the beast's fangs at bay. He could hear Tovar struggling similarly next to him. Out of the corner of his eye, he could glimpse the young officer bleeding and writhing.
Tovar!
He shouted, cursing at the hound's teeth hovering over his own neck, inexorably drawing closer. Drawn by the commotion, one of Aerosquad's soldiers ran towards Tovar.
Commander, the prisoners are under attack!
She reported, skidding to a stop next to the two officers, and the beast pinning them down. The Rebbed aimed a rifle carefully at the hound-like creature, trying to hold the squirming thing in her sights.
Hold still, you filthy!
With a sickening crunch, Tovar's would-be savior jerked to the ground, taken down by a sudden lunge from a third hound thing. Price glimpsed the beast crouching above its prey, maw dripping with gore.
No!
Price gasped, bending every sinew towards holding his own assailant at bay.
Tovar, hold on!
Then there was a shriek, followed by a wet, ripping sound as the young officer's throat was torn open. Price could hear the second beast begin to feed, even as the first's teeth began to descend despite his every effort. An energy weapon discharged, close enough for Price to smell ozone and burning flesh. The creature on top of him convulsed and fell away, allowing him to roll awkwardly back to his feet. Farron stood nearby, pistol already turning towards the other two beasts, firing again and again to remove those threats as well. Price moved heavily back to Tovar's body. The captain knelt down, long enough to confirm what he already knew in his heart. Tovar's eyes gazed up sightlessly at the sky.
Come on,
Farron snapped.
He's not the only one we've lost, and we're not out of it yet.
Price stood and turned to face her. The captain throttled down hard on the rage and sorrow building inside of him, like a river behind a dam. He nodded grudgingly, remembering the Reb who tried to save Tovar.
They couldn't rescue us both, but they tried. That's more than I'd expect from the execs at Transgulf Interstellar.
Farron reloaded her weapon as the huge Terraton strode by, accelerating into a brutal charge directly towards the thickest concentration of the enemy. Roughly a dozen of the human-like figures had grouped together in order to concentrate their fire, an effective tactic that nevertheless meant they had no time to react to the Terraton's assault. The alien waded into the foe like a juggernaut, smashing aside two and three enemies with every blow. The momentum of the enemy force as a whole seemed to stagger. Sensing this, the Rebs let out a wild cheer. Overhead, Price glimpsed a flicker of movement. The captain looked up in time to see the Yindish hunter raining down fire from the trees as the agile alien leapt from branch to branch, using its tail to swing from one bole to the next. Other Rebs dragged the wounded back towards the outpost, or carried ammunition for those still firing. Price found his hands clenched at his sides, feeling useless.
Dogs,
he muttered to himself.
Those things used to be dogs. And those other creatures were... the colonists?
Price's brow furrowed. It all fit. It had to be some kind of infection. A disease. That would help explain the planet's status as a dead zone. But he'd never heard of an outbreak of anything this vile. The captain forced his hands to open and took a deep breath, saying a silent farewell to Lieutenant Tovar. He strode up to Farron and grabbed her shoulder, pulling her into cover.
It's time to leave,
Price shouted over the gunfire.
I'll take you and your people out of here, but we can't hold this ground.
A tree came thundering down, crushing a pair of Rebs beneath its branches, and silencing the guns of several others as they fought to clear the debris. Through the breach strode a massive creature, a humanoid figure over 9 feet tall. It wore no clothes, but its gnarled body, easily as wide as two men, was covered in spiked, armored plates that looked like bone. Although it clearly once been human, it was no longer recognizable as anything other than a nightmare.
Plague Lord,
Farron gasped.
All Rebs retreat. Pull back now, dammit.
She shouted into her comm. The towering creature was not alone. Other smaller copies of itself prowled in its wake as the monster took several steps towards the Terraton, and then launched itself at the alien. The massive Terraton had been bashing its way through the smaller humanoid enemies with ease. However, the arrival of the Plague Lord tipped the scales in the other direction. Price could only stand and gape as the huge alien was grappled by the bony fists of the new arrival, and then borne down to the ground, pounced upon by hounds and the pink-fleshed once-men, until the Terraton was hidden beneath a mound of ravening foes. The Rebs fell back, firing, as the hounds and the Plague Lord's minions attacked in wave after wave. Farron cried out and fell as one of the larger creatures raked her body with its bony talons. Price roared, stooping to grab a rifle from one of the fallen Rebs. He raised the weapon to his shoulder. His training, he thought he'd forgotten years ago, came to the fore. The rifle bucked, and Price shouted wordlessly as he raked the creature with blast after blast, until it stumbled away and crumpled to the ground. Price grabbed Farron and hoisted her to her feet.
Not getting rid of you that easily, eh?
She rasped. The captain snorted, but didn't reply, easing Farron onto his shoulder as the other Rebs kept up covering fire. The rifle was heavy in Price's hand as he looked around. The Rebs looked weary and frightened, many of them nursing minor wounds of their own. Price acted on instinct rather than thought, carrying Farron with him towards the center of the diminished squad. The captain took a deep breath, then addressed the Rebs around him.
Everyone, prime your grenades for 5 seconds, then throw. We'll use the blast to cover our retreat.
Price looked for the Yindish and found the alien nearby sniffing suspiciously at one of the fallen.
You!
The alien looked up at him, ears pricked. Price had some steel in his voice, the prize of years of command.
Cover our trail and head north for half a click, then rejoin us. Maybe you can draw them off.
The alien bobbed its head in an awkward nod and pulled back into the underbrush. The rest of the squad didn't hesitate, lobbing grenades back towards the plague creatures before turning to run. Farron groaned, barely conscious. She was only able to stagger slowly, though Price carried much of her weight. Explosions lit the night behind the retreating Rebs, and licking flames drew a cloak over the horrors they left behind. The shuttle was a welcome sight, and Price felt the gut-wrenching tension they had carried with them from the outpost ease down a notch. A handful of other Rebs had been wounded during the battle as well, but none so grievously. Price took a brief survey by eye, and was relieved to find the other injuries were all from gunshots rather than the creature's fangs and claws.
Where's your medic?
Price asked.
You wouldn't like him.
Farron chuckled, her blood staining Price's uniform as she leaned heavily upon the captain's shoulder.
First, he's another alien. And second, he's at a base about a trillion miles from here.
The captain shook his head in exasperation, stumbling as he carried Farron into the shuttle, and later down upon one of the acceleration couches. Several of the Rebs moved to follow him, but stopped when Farron raised her voice.
I need a minute with Captain Price. Wait outside and guard the perimeter.
There was a brief pause before one of the Rebs nodded. The rest soon filed out, leaving the two officers alone. Price gazed down at Farron, puzzled.
I thought you were in a hurry to leave.
Farron smiled, then winced, her hands clutching tightly to Price's arm as she drew him down beside her.
I need to talk to you. It's important.
Farron nodded towards her vambrace.
My computer here has data on those things we fought. They're called the Plague.
Price frowned.
Why are you telling me this now?
The Reb commander grunted.
I don't have a lot of time here, Captain, so kindly shut the hell up and listen.
He shut up, although his brow remained deeply furrowed in concern.
Nexus Psi, like your lieutenant said, the clue is in the name, A-Link.
To the Plague?
Price asked, his thoughts dark. Farron shook her head weakly.
Not necessarily.
She smiled.
It could be a link to something better. A new course for you to chart, Captain. A bridge from your old life to one where your actions have meaning.
Her fingers wrapped around his hand. The Reb commander's eyes closed, flicked open, and closed again.
You have to make a choice.
She whispered.
I can feel the infection inside me. The plague... It changes people into those things we saw back at the outpost.
Price clenched his jaw.
That's not going to happen to you.
He insisted.
You stubborn bastard.
Farron grinned, then coughed, her lips flecked with white spittle and red blood.
The corporation takes choices away from people. That's what it's always done. So I'm putting a choice in your hands. My life and the lives of my squad. It has to be you. I can't burden one of my people with this. They've suffered so much already just getting this far.
The Reb commander took a deep, shuddering breath.
You were captain of a ship. You're one of the few who has even the smallest freedom in the corporation. You took it for granted, and now you have to decide where to go from here.
Farron paused, her body beginning to tremble. Studying her face, Price wondered how he had ever thought her severe and cold.
First option, stay here, contact the authorities and turn yourself in. The enforcers will just shoot you like the rest.
Farron continued.
Second option, just get on your ship and leave. Save yourself, your crew, and go back to your old life as a corporate drone.
Or what?
Price asked bitterly.
Go rogue? Join the Rebs? Damn it, Farron, this isn't my war.
Farron shifted on the deck. Until Price felt the grip of her pistol against his hand, she still held in hers. She wrapped his fingers around the weapon slowly, gathering her strength, and Price could tell she didn't have much time left. Her eyelids fluttered open, and Price could see her irises were beginning to cloud over with a white film. Her skin began to take on a tinge of nauseating pink.
Not yours,
she whispered.
Not mine. ours.
Her hand clenched on his, painfully tight.
There's still a third option, Captain Price. Now, choose.
The Rebs keeping watch at the landing site leapt to their feet as a pistol shot rang out from within the shuttle. The Yinjij hissed, his tail lashing back and forth, but no one moved. A man strode out of the open shuttle hatch towards the Rebs with his head held high.
Listen up, Arrow Squad,
Price said, buckling on a blood-stained vambrace that had once belonged to Commander Farron.
We've got a new mission.